You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, professor of biology at the University of Sussex, Dave Goulson, author of Silent Earth, Averting the Insect Apocalypse, because you had nothing else to worry about. Meanwhile, rating agencies say the Build Back Better bill will not add inflationary pressure. Joe Manchin desperately calling his office now. Senate votes on a $7.8 trillion defense budget today. That's the low end. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's polling in the toilet. Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, says December 15th is debt limit day. Meanwhile, the FDA to authorize Pfizer boosters for all adults in the country. Same time, U.S. to up vaccine production to 1 billion doses by mid-2022. And this is a billion a year so that we can provide vaccine for poor nations.
They could have just waived IP, but oh well.
Meanwhile, the Biden administration to hold massive drilling leases auction this week. And PFAS, remember those? Those are the forever chemicals? Well, good news if you are looking to ingest more toxic stuff inside your body. They turn out to be even more toxic than previously thought.
That's bad news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unless you like to take toxins.
Oh, gotcha. That John Oliver segment on this got people talking about it.
Senate confirms Google critic and antitruster Jonathan Cantor to the DOJ, and the Rittenhouse jury is still deliberating. Day two. All this and more on today's program. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Chiming in the headline portion of the program.
Uh-huh.
Soon you'll never be able to get a word out without me having some sort of little comment.
Little snide little comment little, there?
Yeah, I wasn't sure it was snide, but...
I mean, I don't know.
Happy hump day.
Yep, oh, there you go. That's like your signature now.
I guess. I mean, I kind of fell into it. I wish it was more clever, but...
Yeah, well, maybe we get a lot of time. Come up with another term for Wednesdays. The fulcrum. No, it doesn't really quite work. The PFAS. For those of you who have been listening to this program for years, you first heard about PFAS probably 6 or 7 years ago when in one of my then biannual, semi-annual, twice a year. Anybody? Matt? Literary?
Biannual is twice a year.
Right. Okay. So biannual jaunt to Vegas for the Tort Lawyer Conference. Many interviews about PFAS, these forever chemicals. The short story about them is that they don't break down. So when a company, and in one instance it was DuPont, that was using something called C8 to produce nonstick pans. And look, you can do what you want. I will tell you that after the conversations I had with attorneys in, you know, over the years, I don't use nonstick pans.
No, don't do what you want. Don't use nonstick pans. Sorry.
Well,
I mean, seriously. Try not to if you can't. Like, if you're buying new pans, don't buy nonstick pans.
And if you have older nonstick pans, do not use those.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, these chemicals don't break down. So when a DuPont dumps them into a river, they just travel. I mean, just imagine if you had a quarter from the year, I don't know, 1800, and that quarter was never taken out of circulation. Every time it is handed to somebody, some of the little quarter rubs off on their fingers, and it never dissipates. That's basically what PFAS are. They go into the water, then a fish eats them, and then something else eats the fish, or maybe it goes, it makes its way onto, you know, washes up on the shore, and it's in the ground. If you were to test your blood now, I don't care who you are who's hearing me, you would have some of these chemicals in your system right now.
Pretty much everybody does.
They do not dissipate.
Yes.
And so they aggregate. And
that's why, you know, using cast iron or using not using stuff with PFAS in it is important to just start doing that right now, because we all have some portion of these harmful chemicals in this. It's good. You don't want it to accumulate.
Right. But the other problem is, I mean, that's just a more direct method in which to get it into. But when you eat something, it really doesn't matter, vegetable or, you know, animal protein, the chances of you getting some PFAS, at least, you know, are there as well. So what we need to do is not produce more of these things. But the FDA has found that they're more toxic than they were before. So, you know, happy Wednesday as we go on to, you know, in a moment to talk about the potential insect apocalypse, why that's important and why that, well, sadly, is not wouldn't be limited just to insects. This came out today. Very short time ago. And I don't really pay a lot of attention to what rating agencies say, particularly because I'm old enough to remember 2008. But nevertheless, the major rating agencies, these are the ones that are basically economists and assess, you know, the value of different investments and the impact of potential legislation. William Foster, vice president and senior credit officer at Moody's Investors Service, told Reuters that the two pieces of legislation, that is the infrastructure bill that was just passed and the Build Back Better bill, quote, should not have any real material impact on inflation. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, which operates independently from the parent company's rating business, said the bills do not add to inflation pressures. Charles Seville, senior director and America's sovereign co-head at Fitch Ratings, said the two pieces of net legislation will neither boost nor quell inflation much in the short run. Why is this important? Because inflation has been Joe Manchin's latest fig leaf du jour as to why he can't yet support the Build Back Better. It was going to be add to the deficit, but then nobody cared, particularly since the first infrastructure bill added more to the deficit probably than this one. And then they were going to wait for the CBO scores, which are supposedly coming tomorrow or Friday. But there's all indications that the CBO scores are going to be within the realm of margin of error as to it having an actual impact on the deficit. Obviously, you know, if you've listened to the show, you know that my assessment of the CBO scores are rather irrelevant. I mean, my assessment in terms of where they even going to land. But what's important here from a political standpoint, if you're Joe Manchin, you've basically been saying, like, you know, I got to get home. I can't hang out. I can't hang out with you today because my kid's birthday party's happening. And then someone just showed up and said, oh, no, Joe, actually, your kid's birthday's next week. Oh, is that what it was? Well, actually, you know what? My
apartment's flooded.
My apartment is flooded.
Wait, we were just there and, like, everything seems fine.
Exactly. Here's Joe Manchin. Before the ratings agency came out with this stuff, and you know old Joe, when he's not riding around in his whatever it is, his
Maserati SUV. Maserati, yeah. SUV.
Well, you know, the thing about that is the gas prices kill you.
Yeah, 15 mile per gallon.
And of course, you know, there's nothing like taking your Maserati SUV out for a jaunt to go pick up some milk. And then when you eat, it's like it's sticker shock all around. Here, watch this.
You were just back home for a week. Do your voters want this bill, this big, massive bill right now?
I think my voters in West Virginia, but I don't speak for the whole country. My voters a lot differently, but they're very much concerned. Inflation has hit them extremely hard. They have to drive. Their mileage for driving to work is...
I'm sorry. Do I have a problem with hearing? Did he ask about, do your constituents want the bill? You know, the bill that would expand Medicare, that would provide them free vision, hearing, that would lower drug costs, the one that would provide help in terms of elder care, paid and parental leave.
Universal pre-K.
Child care. Do they want that?
Well, let me go talk about my trip in my Maserati for a second.
All right,
pull back. Just replay it from the beginning, because I want to make sure I heard what the guy said right.
You were just back home for a week. Do your voters want this bill, this big, massive bill right now?
I think my voters in West Virginia, but I don't speak for the whole country. My voters a lot differently, but they're very much concerned. Inflation has hit them extremely hard. They have to drive. Their mileage for driving to work is quite onerous on them. And the cost, they see it every day. Every day they go up and fill up, it's a dollar quarter more a gallon. So they're in $3.29, $3.39. Gallon of milk is now around $4 in many places, and it's taking a toll. And I hear it when I go to the grocery store, or if I go to the gas station, they say, "Are you as mad as I am?" And I says, "Absolutely."
You know what would alleviate some of those financial hardships brought on by inflation, which I'm not convinced are actual real things. He must have watched that CNN segment on milk. That's where he got that from. A child tax credit, for example, which could offset the temporary rise in gas prices or milk prices, especially when now we're seeing from these rating agencies not going to have an effect on inflation.
To be fair,
Build Back Better.
Joe's bad. He's at the gas station. He's also not eligible for that child tax credit. So that's why he would be mad.
Yeah.
Because I get 60 miles a gallon on this Maserati.
This would be a good moment for Joe Biden to say, oh, okay, we've addressed all your concerns. The inflation thing is addressed. Let's pass this thing.
Because if we know that this is not going to contribute to inflation, then the way you could help your constituents is by putting money in their pockets or taking care of expenses for them.
He's just treading water because he doesn't want...
Running out of excuses.
Well, he's running out of excuses, but he also doesn't want to say, I'm going to pick this apart until I can't pick it apart anymore. Like Igor Bobich, who I believe is a reporter for HuffPost, tweeted out that about an hour ago that he is still a no on including paid leave in the reconciliation bill. And Gillibrand is essentially still trying to negotiate with him on this. But he's trying to pick away whatever he can as... the clock ticks on the excuses that he can use. The apartment's not flooded, your kid's birthday's next week, and yeah, you don't have a funeral to go to, Joe. I think the person you said died is actually alive.
I'm afraid paid leave might create inflationary pressures on leave. No, unpaid. Staying at home. That could get super expensive.
He's floundering around, and it's going to be interesting to see how they hammer him on this because we got to get this done. And I also like the fact that what is his name? Manu Ranju? Is that?
Oh yeah, the framing.
The massive bill.
Massive.
Meanwhile, tomorrow, incidentally, which is today, they're going to be voting on a $780 billion 1 year. 1 year defense authorization. It is $25 billion more than the Pentagon asked for.
An increase of $37
billion. An increase of $37 billion, but more than the people whose budget it is asked for.
You wanted one cherry on top? We're giving you some sprinkles just because we love you.
Dad, can I have $30 to buy a pair of whatever it is, socks? You know what, Mila? Here's 50. And I should tell you that if we were to... to apply the measure in which we count these things, we're talking about an $8 trillion bill that they're voting on today. Of course, we're 10 years out. They don't have to do it 10 years out. We know it's going to grow exponentially each year. So $8 trillion is probably like an undersell. But
poor Myla. She has to be the Pentagon in this situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm...
Teenagers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, tell me about it. Folks, got a couple of sponsors today. One is my favorite, Sunset Lake. Sunset Lake. Oh, whoa. It's
the sign.
Boom. SunsetLakeSebade.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST for 20% off. I talk about the tinctures a lot because I use it almost on a daily basis, or actually in the evening. It is a huge boon to my ability to sleep and to fall asleep and to stay asleep. I haven't even tried the melatonin one. But
I love the melatonin one.
People are into that
one. I need the double dose of stuff to get me to bed.
But also the smokables, the pre-rolls, the keef, all of it, just top-notch. The gummies, the fudge, the coffee, these are all great gifts for people coming into the holidays, Hanukkah gifts, Christmas gifts, just end of year gifts, however, birthdays, everything. I don't know. But they're a great company. They have great agricultural practices. They use integrated pest management instead of pesticides. We're going to talk to someone right now who's going to tell us about the value of that anyways. They also use regenerative farming practices, take care of the soil, organic fertilizer. They're also great movement partners. They have donated thousands of dollars to things like supporting striking union workers, supporting Afghan refugees, supporting organizations in their community outside of Burlington, Vermont. Just a great company, great business practices as well. $15 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned company. Check it out, SunsetLakeSebade.com. They have been great sponsors of this program, but also it's just a great outfit with a great product. You can use the code LEFTISBEST. They chose it, fans of the show, LEFTISBEST, for 20% off. Check it out now. And also, one thing that I've been trying to do as of late is pare down and have stuff in my apartment that I like a lot, even if it's a little bit like, you know, I'm no longer like, you know, building my own sort of like furniture out of two pieces of furniture.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying not to do that either. Like ask if anybody's just giving away old furniture to stock my place. I want to invest in something nice.
And the thing is that a good furniture piece of furniture will last, and it's, it makes you feel better about being home, frankly. Joybird has a selection of customizable furniture and modern home decor that lets you bring your unique style into your space. Plus, get ready for Joybird's Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales. You can choose over 18,000 customized options or browse curated collections to find the perfect piece for your style. With Joybird's protection plan, your upholstery and leather pieces will always look good as new. Joybird is committed to creating quality furniture and a more sustainable future. Pieces are made using responsibly sourced materials free of harmful chemicals. Through partnerships with groups like One Tree Planted, Joybird is helping conservation efforts. With Joybird, you get quality craftsmanship, stain and scratch resistant fabrics, and lifetime limited warranty. Joybird stands by its quality. They have a 90-day return policy. If it's not everything you hope for, you send it back. Folks, great opportunity for you to get 30% off your purchase at Joybird right now. You've been to this store over here, right?
I've walked by it. I haven't.
Oh, you got to go in and yet. Check it out.
Yeah.
The furniture is fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen ads for it before. They were even a sponsor, and I love the design.
Create a space that brings you joy with Joybird. Visit joybird.com/majority. Get 35% what? 35% off your purchase.
I didn't know about that.
35% off at joybird.com/majority.
That's a good deal.
Check it out, folks. Joybird.com/majority. All right. Want to welcome to the program Professor of Biology at the University of Sussex, author of Silent Earth, Averting the Insect Apocalypse, Dave Goulson. Do we have him? Dave, thanks for joining us. I'm here with Emma Viglin.
Hi, Sam. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you again for being here. So let's start with this. I mean, I find this, you know, I was sort of shocked, and you write about partly about why I was shocked about the diminishment of insects, and you know, you gave examples. We'll get to that to a moment, but I want to just start with the idea of, like, you know, why should we care about insects?
Good question. And of course, most people don't, really. A lot of people loathe insects, but they're really, really important. I mean, I love them because they're beautiful, fascinating creatures. But even if you put that to one side, we need them. The world wouldn't really work without insects. You know, they're biocontrol agents. They recycle dead bodies and cowpats and dead trees and all sorts of other things. They keep the soil healthy. They pollinate nearly 90% of all the plants in the world. And 3/4 of the crops we grow depend upon insect pollinators. So, you know, we wouldn't have everything from apples and cherries and strawberries to tomatoes, and even coffee and chocolate depend on insect pollinators. So life would be pretty awful without them.
You outline a vision of the world, I guess it was in 2080, of what it would look like without insects, without insects, without the sort of the insects that we value. Walk us through that a little bit, and let's just talk about, you know, what would be around when it comes to insects.
Yeah. So I tried to imagine putting myself in the shoes of my eldest son is 20 now, born on the millennium, just about. And I was imagining what he will encounter in his life, what it will be like. So I put myself in his shoes, aged 80, looking back at most of the 21st century. And I tried to imagine what's likely to happen in the next 60 years. And actually, unless we address these big environmental issues like the disappearance of insects, life's going to be pretty tough, I think. So in terms of insects.
And we should say, let me just stop you here too for 1 second. I mean, we're talking even distinct of climate change at this point. I mean, obviously climate change is going to really impact the insect population, but we're talking about even if there were no climate change per se, and 60 years out, you know, climate could also be the change could be devastating. But we're just talking about the question of insects at this moment.
Yeah, sure. Although, I mean, these things are all intertwined. You know, one of the big drivers of insect declines is beginning to be climate change. And there are many other major environmental issues, that all of which kind of interlock. And I think the solutions and to most of them are common. But anyway, in terms of the insects themselves, there's a kind of irony that the ones we like, the pretty butterflies, the bumblebees that pollinate our apples and so on, seem to be the ones that are declining, whereas the kind of tough, adaptable, pest-like insects, the houseflies, the cockroaches, the mosquitoes, they're pretty adaptable, and they exist in huge populations, so they can cope with most of the things we've thrown at them so far. So they'll still be with us, and will probably long outlast us. But the insects we really can't do without, and that we'll be very sad to see go, are the ones that are disappearing.
And what is it, just that we don't like insects that are that adaptable, because or they're coming? I mean, why is that?
Well, partly it's just chance. You know, houseflies, for example, they benefit from all the rotting organic waste that we produce. So the arrival of humans on the planet has led to houseflies being much more common than they ever would have been. And because there are countless billions of them, if you spray them with pesticides, a few of them are resistant and they quickly evolve resistance as a population. So they're quite hard to control, and they will thrive so long as we produce refuse, which seems to be likely to continue into the future for quite some time. So they're just a few lucky insects that basically thrive around human habitation. And those are the ones that will certainly not be disappearing anytime soon. Whereas things like bees, which are rather slow breeding creatures, they're much more sensitive to the environment and to the way it's changing. They're the ones, sadly, that are disappearing.
All right. Well, just to go back to your son in the year 2080, like, what's his life looking like without the insects?
Well, I'm imagining him, that chapter starts with him sitting in the garden in the middle of the night, defending the vegetable patch, and the fruit that he would have had to hand pollinate, because without pollinators, the only solution if you want to grow crops will be to pollinate them ourselves. And there are already, sadly, parts of the world where this is happening. Famously, in parts of southwest China, they now hand pollinate their apple and pear orchards. He's living in a world where life is tough. It's difficult to get enough food. People are very likely going to starve if we don't address these insect decline issues, and where you have to, you know, defend the food you have against people that would otherwise come and steal. It's all very apocalyptic, and it sounds a bit. I know some people will think it's ridiculous to imagine that civilization might crumble, but unless we address this whole raft of interrelated environmental issues, including the demise of insects, then I think there is every likelihood that life for our children is going to be really hard. And, you know, we would do anything for our children, wouldn't we, apart from apparently leave them a healthy planet.
Can you give us a sense of how rapidly the insect population has declined over the past few decades? Because it seems precipitous and something that needs to be noted. I was staggered to see how quickly things are shifting.
One of the most dramatic pieces of evidence is a study from Germany, which found a 76% drop in 26 years. That's probably at the top end. There've been a lot of other studies scattered around the world. For example, in the UK, we know that butterfly populations have roughly halved since 1976, when I was a kid.
That's stunning. I mean, that's stunning. The idea that let's just say that there's some flexibility between 50% and 3/4 of the insect population has diminished over the course of the past 30 or 40 or 50 years. It's nuts.
It's pretty scary, isn't it? I mean, this has happened, you know, in our lifetimes, on our watch. Just to give you a North American example, the monarch butterfly has decreased in eastern North America by about 80% since 1990. So, you know, actually pretty recent times. The Californian population of the monarch is down 99.9% in 20 years. This is dramatic. And if it continues, then, you know, that it really will be catastrophic for life on Earth.
Before we get into the sort of what's causing this, you talk about in the book about why we don't really notice this, and you brought up the bugs on the windshield, and I remember it just suddenly dawned on me, like, yeah, there's a lot less of bugs on my car in the summer than when I was, you know, 30 years ago when I was, driving. Will you talk about that dynamic as to why we're not in tune to it?
Well, I guess the reality is that most of us don't spend much time kind of interacting with insects, don't pay much attention to them. You know, we many of us live in cities. For most people, insects just not on their radar at all. And it is interesting that almost the only thing that most people have noticed is this, the clean windshields. Although even there, most people haven't actually thought about it. And it's only when you point it out to them, they, just like you two, they say, oh, yeah, you're right. I can remember that. But because it's been a kind of gradual thing, there was no, it didn't happen suddenly. It happened, you know, the, just a few bees left, a few butterflies left each, less rather each year. Then it's crept up on us. And I think most people are blithely unaware of this entire crisis.
I mean, even the butterfly example. I used to remember as a kid trying to find butterflies or seeing them more regularly. And I thought it was maybe just my childlike innocence escaping me. But I can't remember the last time I've seen one, honestly.
But that, what really worries me, I guess, aside from the kind of practical difficulties that will arise if we lose most of our insects, is just this, you know, things like butterflies are a kind of gorgeous creatures. And the thought that maybe my grandchildren might grow up in a world where they never get to see them, I find really sad. And I think that's really, that kind of thing is what motivates me more than anything else.
Well, can you quantify, you know, obviously, like, you know, the quality of life may be worse and less childlike for Emma because she doesn't see butterflies anymore. But can we quantify what the implications are of a diminishment by 50%, even if we could say, of the insect population over the past 50 years? Like, what do we see in our daily lives that we wouldn't have seen had we had the same amount of insects?
It's only just beginning to kick in terms of actual impacts on humans, other than just the observing less insects buzzing around. We're seeing signs now from many countries around the world of crop yields, the crops that are dependent on insect pollination becoming more variable when there are years with fewer insects. There aren't enough to go around. So we're kind of reaching the critical point where food yields are going to significantly fall in the next few decades unless we do something about this issue. So that's going to be the thing that strikes home first. And if I could point to a particular crop, the very first thing that will happen in North America is the almond crop is going to struggle. At present, there's this astonishing situation where almost every honeybee hive in North America is taken to Northern California to pollinate the almonds there, which are grown in a vast area, a kind of monoculture of orchards. And there are just enough honeybees at the moment to pollinate them all. But if the honeybee population falls by just a few percent, there won't be enough and the almond crop will fall, which of course isn't a big deal. We can all do without a few less almonds. But if that continues, obviously, and starts to affect more and more crops, then with the human population growing, then that's really serious.
Is there in other words, we're hitting sort of, I guess, critical mass, as it were, or critical lack of mass in terms of the insect population, where I guess we had a little latitude in terms of our ability to grow food and to pollinate things? Because I think most people think bees are the only pollinators. I found that's not the case, A. And B, where are we with the bee population relative to where we are with the broader insect population?
So it depends which bees you're talking about. There are 20,000 species of bee in the world. So people tend to think of the honeybee as the bee. And I think if they think about it at all, a lot of people think that the honeybee pollinates everything. But actually, that's a long way from the truth. Pollination is delivered by a whole mix of different bee species and helped out by butterflies and moths and beetles and flies and a whole bunch, literally thousands of other species of insect. Actually, the honeybee population globally is not doing too badly because it's essentially a domesticated animal, and beekeepers put in a lot of effort to keeping honeybee populations up. But that is just one domesticated species of bee. The wild ones, sadly, seem to be the ones that are really struggling. And we've seen, for example, in the UK, we've lost three species of bumblebee have gone extinct. The US relatively recently lost Franklin's bumblebee, which used to live in California and Oregon, and is now globally extinct. That's the end for Franklin's bumblebee, rather sadly. So one by one, these things are disappearing.
Let's talk about the causes of these insect declines. Earlier this week we had someone on to talk about Monsanto and their herbicides, but it's there's also, I mean, pesticides, I would imagine, that's what they're built for, but are they having a greater impact than one would have anticipated with just using pesticides?
So globally, probably still the biggest driver of insect declines is habitat loss. We're still seeing, you know, huge areas of natural vegetation, of tropical forests and so on, cleared every year. And those are ecosystems that are really rich in insects. But much of that land is being cleared for farming, and modern intensive farming is incredibly hostile to insect life, unfortunately. And of course, the main reason for that is because it depends very heavily on a whole barrage of pesticide applications every year. I know the figures for the UK, our fields here are typically treated about 17 times a year with pesticides. So very little, you know, unfortunately, insecticides are designed to kill insects, and no one's really invented one that just kills the bad insects and doesn't harm the good ones, unfortunately. So this kind of intensive monoculture farming system we've come up with, while it produces a lot of food, I would argue that it's not really sustainable because it's wiping out biodiversity and also doing terrible damage to soils and contributing to climate change and so on.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Sam. Just one final sentence. There are also a whole bunch of other drivers of insect declines, invasive species, spread of non-native diseases, climate change is starting to kick in, light pollution is a really interesting one, and so on.
Well, wait, so let's go through some of those. I mean, invasive species, is that just simply a function of like, of us introducing species into areas where they shouldn't be? And why is that happening? I feel like some of that is deliberate and sort of unintended consequences.
Yeah, there are a whole raft of examples, some of them deliberate. So for example, European bumblebees were released in South America just about 20 years ago now. And they've become established in the wild. They're spreading through South America. And sadly, they seem to be carrying European bee diseases with them, which the native South American bumblebees have no resistance to. So there's a really unfortunate parallel with what happened when European people colonized the Americas in terms of bringing with them diseases. Sometimes it's completely accidental. So, for example, in Europe now, we have a wave of giant hornets spreading from, they came from Asia, but they were accidentally brought in a shipping container to Bordeaux in France, and are now spreading across Europe. And they love to eat bees, sadly. It's their favorite food.
Are hornets that they call them? Is that what they are?
Massive hornets?
Yeah, these aren't those hornets.
They're not the really massive ones, which are also from Asia. These are quite big wasps, essentially. Nothing at all terrifying from a human perspective. And there have been some really silly newspaper headlines exaggerating that, you know, the idea that these kind of giant things are a threat to human life. But they are a threat to insect life, sadly. So we unfortunately, because we move stuff around the world all the time, we've accidentally and sometimes deliberately spread insect species way beyond their native ranges, often with unfortunate consequences.
And you said light pollution as well?
Yeah, this is one that most people haven't really thought about. And of course, we all know that insects, particularly moths, are attracted to lights at night. And that certainly doesn't do them any good. They fly round and round and round, bashing into it, and are easy, if they don't just wear themselves out, they're easy prey for bats or spiders or whatever. But there are other consequences that are more serious perhaps than that, particularly relating to, so insects, many of them time their life cycle through the year using the day length as a cue as to when it's time, for example, to emerge from hibernation in the spring. But if they're living somewhere where there's light pollution at night, they think the day is longer than it actually is. And so they emerge from hibernation too early in the middle of winter, potentially, and then, of course, would die. So light pollution, unfortunately, seems to be having really quite harmful effects, in particularly in, obviously, in urban areas.
So let's talk about what we can do here in terms of, you know, one of the things that I sort of appreciate about this is that this is, you know, as opposed to, let's say, climate change, which I think is necessarily going to involve, it can only really, in many respects, involve policy on a governmental level. There's stuff that individuals actually can do to forestall the insect apocalypse, which I think you wrote, if we were to disappear as a human, as a species, the planet would be fine. But when insects do, things are going to be bad.
Yeah, I should say that that's a quote from E.O. Wilson, not my original. But I think it's true. The good news is that, you know, we can all get involved. And it's not too late for most insects. They haven't gone extinct, the majority of them. And unlike northern white rhinos or pandas, they breed really quickly if you just provide them with the right conditions. So they could recover in no time at all. And we can all get involved in doing something, which I think is very empowering in a world where often, as you say, you feel helpless. And the reason we can all get involved is because insects are everywhere. They're around us. They're in our backyards. They're in our city parks. And so little things that we do, like planting some bee-friendly flowers, planting some native wildflowers, not using pesticide sprays in our gardens, even if you just got a window box or a roof terrace, if you grow some of the right flowers, then the bees and other pollinators, they'll sniff them out and you're doing something. It may be quite a small thing, but it's a step in the right direction. And if we could get enough people doing this kind of stuff, then we could invite insects and other wildlife in to live in our urban areas. And that would also be a great way for our children to grow up in a world where they can engage with nature, where they can see bumblebees and butterflies, which I think would be brilliant.
Do the insects who would die off otherwise, as opposed to the ones that are more adaptable, the mosquitoes, the flies, the cockroaches, are there ways to promote the insects that we like to diminish the ones that we don't?
So they're two different questions, really. The things we might do to reduce the populations of the ones we don't like are very different to the things we might do to encourage the good insects, if you like. For example, the pollinators, which are so important, providing them with more nectar and more pollen, lots more flowers, and not poisoning them is key. If we can also provide them with quiet places to nest, then that's even better. And so there's a whole raft of insects that we can encourage that way. Also, simple things like not mowing your lawn so often if you have a lawn, and letting it grow a bit taller, saves petrol, saves sweat. And there's a whole raft of little insects that will happily thrive there, including the caterpillars of moths and grasshoppers and crickets and all sorts of things. You can literally have thousands of amazing insects living in your backyard. And that's no exaggeration. There's a really interesting study from a slightly eccentric lady who lived in Leicester, which is a city in northern England, who spent 35 years trying to catalogue every species of animal and plant she could find in a little urban garden. And her grand total was 2,673 different species, which I think is just amazing. Sort of number you might associate with a patch of rainforest or something, but this was just a little urban garden in a city. So we can all, you know, support lots of life if we've just got even a little patch of land.
Are there any I don't know, intergovernmental agencies or non-governmental agencies? I mean, is there any other entity that's working on this type of thing? I mean, I feel like we've seen at least a societal awareness of the diminishing number of bees over the past, I don't know, decade or so, I guess, that people have been, you know, become aware of it and are trying to, I guess there's some measures that are being taken to promote bees on some level, but is there something that is going on that is, I guess, analogous to the question of insects at large?
There is a really nice NGO, the Xerxes Society in North America, that's devoted to saving insects, essentially. So if you want to get involved and find out more, aside obviously from reading my new book, which has lots of ideas about how people can help insects, the Xerxes Society, that's what they do. So if you Google them, I'm sure you'll find them very easily online.
Well, Dave Golson, professor of biology at the University of Sussex, author of Silent Earth, Averting the Insect Apocalypse. We'll put a link to Silent Earth on majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
All right, folks.
Insect apocalypse. Okay.
There you go. Just adding one more. It's like,
do you feel existential anxiety? Well, so do we, and we want you to share in that.
Exactly. I feel like that's what we've been doing, like on a jag a little bit lately.
A jaunt, you might say.
A jaunt?
I don't know. You said that a few times today. It was making
jag
me laugh.
Or jaunt?
Jaunt.
Did I say jaunt more than once today?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't even realize
I said
like it once.
It's just a great word, so I took notice.
No, there you go. Bradley, make a note. Book more optimistic guests, please.
Well, I mean, there was a note of optimism about what can personally be done towards the end there.
There is a sense that there's a lot that we can do in that, that just as individuals, I would imagine, like even if you're living in the city, maybe you put a plant out on your fire escape. I don't know. It's winter. Forget it. Forget it. Folks, maybe we give up plants. Yeah, I don't know. Do we get the alarms are going off now? That's just the alarm that we set for the oncoming apocalypse. Darn it. MajorityReportLive.com. What happens when you go there? Well, you buy tickets to the live Majority Report to celebrate January 16th. We're going to be doing that at January 16th. Stop the Steal. The Big Live.
Right. That's what it was.
The Big Live. We're stopping the Steal. Of course, we're going to Boston. We're going to surround David Pakman's studio.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take back the panels.
Yep.
We're going to take back the panels.
And we're going to puncture them with an American flag.
Look, I'm just going to do a rally out in front of Pakman's studios or house or wherever he is. And
we should probably figure that out first.
If things get crazy, they get crazy. It has nothing to do with it.
Right.
Nothing to do with it at all.
And if you start, you know, chanting hang X person, right?
Let's not get carried away.
Let's
Emma crossed the line.
I did. I didn't say the person.
Majority Report Live. We're gonna announce who our guests are in the coming weeks. You're gonna wanna get your tickets now. You're gonna wanna get your tickets now. Trust me on this one. Trust me. Also, don't forget, it's your support that makes the show possible. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member, support the free show, get the fun half delivered right to your door every day. Also, AM Quickie, speaking of deliveries, amquickie.com, email in your box every morning giving you some of the top stories and hidden stories.
I've been really loving the
AM Jack
Quickie.
And Corey do a great job. They do a great job. AMQuickie.com, totally free. For now, get in early. Believe me. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian Media Universe.
Yeah, well, if you want to look at one way we can stop the insect apocalypse, check out our Patreon member, patreon.com/leftreckoning with Aaron Kowalski. We talk about different ways of land use, and I think greenhouses are a way to protect places from pesticides that you might use on certain plants. But anyway, tonight, William Shockey of Africa is a Country to talk about Frederick Willem de Klerk dying and how we should remember the last president of apartheid in South Africa. And also Jacob from the Valley Labor Report on to talk about the union stuff in Alabama and an overview of Alabama as a state entirely. So two guests tonight, Left Reckoning, 8 Eastern tonight.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar! What a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what? What? Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
Matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are black. Africans are back.
Come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.